The last joke I ever told my dad. What did the DJ name his son?
No, I don't remember what it was.
Eric! The spooky dark queen, she has the eyeball, she holds it up to her face, and she's watching now. So okay, so Valentine sits on a wall and he just starts lamenting this great friend of him who he's never gonna forget. And she was like, I'm sure it's not that bad. And he's like, who?
Yeah. And he's just like, he can find another musician, but nobody juggles in this town.
I can juggle.
Nobody juggles at all. It's just the worst. I'm telling you
that I can juggle.
It's just there's no jugglers around at all.
And then she's playing with a ball and she grabs it and starts juggling. And he goes, oh, you can juggle. She goes, I know. I told you.
Yeah.
He was like, we were going to get out of here by tonight or whatever. And she's like, where is everybody going? Because there's this progression of these mm-hmm. creatures walking past. And he's like, I have no idea. Right. He just knows he needs to get out of town.
Right.
And she turns to this couple walking by, this shoe guy and this fish. They're like a pile of junk. It's beautiful.
Right.
And he starts talking to them and it's delightful. In fact, I think so these two are like connected together, the shoe guy and the fish junk pile lady. They're like, oh, we have to get out of here, the darkness or whatever. Everything's like getting F to the A. And at this point, Valentine somehow works in, I'm a very important man.
I have a tower.
I mean, I've known just enough people with enough significant health issues who are like, I have millions of dollars. And I'm like, then why are you here? It's being held by the government. I'm sure it is. And it's not that I don't believe you. It's just that you're really bad off for somebody with millions of dollars. Okay, so they're on the bridge.
Right.
They've had this whole conversation on the bridge, and then the guards show up.
Right. And there's like, you know, maybe like a foot tall with 6 feet high, what is it, chopstick legs?
They're super tall. I think they're long, taller than 6 feet because they tower over everybody. They look like they're 10, 12 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
You got to come with us. They look like colanders on giant stilts.
Yeah.
They've got these weird, I love how misshapen the heads of stuff are, but you can still tell it's a face. They play with that perspective a lot in this film. Just different shaped faces. Like you can put eyeballs and a mouth on anything and it's a face all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
They pick her up and they're like, you have to come with us, the princess. And she's like, I'm not a princess. And Valentine's like, she's not a princess.
She is. She's my business partner, my best friend, and the only person that I trust with my life. Or some grandiose statement, like between this and the last few statements that he made about someone who he was like, who? You know, it's obvious that he's kind of talks things up.
I think so. I think as they transport her, she gets a view kind of through a window and sees that there's a real world that she can look at through the windows of this world. I believe this is the first time that happens. They transport her to what I call the butterfly wings building. They bring her unceremoniously in and we come to a guy standing on some steps and he has a line of people and you hear he's looking for a charm. And this guy walks up and he's like, charm. And he puts it down and the guy who's played by the same character who plays her dad, not the same character, but the same actor who plays her dad. But now he's got this weird mask on that looks kind of like a mustache and he's got a white face with like red marks down the middle. And a hat with a little red cube in it. And this beautiful, the costuming is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Again, we have not had a really bad costuming experience yet. And he's just like, I don't think that's the charm. That's more like half a brick. And the guy standing in front of him is like, charm. And he's like, is it though? And the guy like twiddles his hands. He's like, eh, no. And then takes his half a brick and walks away. It's so good. And then another guy walks up and he's all like, and this is all they say. It's like these really, you know, diminutive characters and they're just like, charm? And he's like, is that a charm? Is that the charm though? It looks like a chicken. And the chicken sits up and goes, that's what I told him. And then the guards are like, hey, we brought the princess. And he's like, oh, and he walks away. I could have watched 10 minutes of that.
Yeah.
It was the best part of Shrek. It's the best part of this movie. Sorry, I hurt my face laughing at that. Oh, hey, Jen, I see you holding up a piece of paper. Do you have a Sean fact for us?
I do have a Sean fact for you. I can specifically point out that this definitely would have been your favorite scene based on this Sean fact, if things had fallen into place correctly.
Mm.
Before it was decided that the prime minister of the White City was also going to be played by the actor that plays Helena's dad, they wanted to get David Bowie to do it as an actor allusion to Labyrinth, but there were scheduling conflicts.
Scheduling conflicts.
Is this the charm? I don't think so.
It looks like half a brick to me.
Ground control, is this the charm?
You remind me of the charm. What charm? What charm? The charm, not the fowl. What fowl? The fowl that you brought. Who brought? You brought. You brought me a fowl.
I'm afraid of the chickens. I'm afraid of the world.
Don't. I mean, like, how many David Bowie songs do I know off the top of my head? Did he do 5 years? So it'd be like, I don't really
We've
know.
Got five charms.
You've got half a brick. Five charms. That one's a chick. Five charms. What was this other? Five charms. That's no princess. Yeah. Okay. So he walks over to her as she's deposited, and they're like, princess. She's like, I'm not the princess. And he like gives her the elevator eyes in a non-sexy way, just ups and downs her, right? And lands on her bunny feet. And he's like, no, I don't think you are the princess. And I was like, nice. Nice, because normally there'd be that big back and forth and she'd end up in cell or whatever. We wouldn't get the plot going like it's just about to super take off. And he ends up taking her into either another building or into the maybe they were in the courtyard. But they bring her into the golden butterfly wing palace and we see a woman laying on a table. And I will tell you, we were watching this just now with my mother, whom I love very much. But she was teasing me about something and I... This lady is like inanimate, like laying on the table. And I'm like, oh, do you remember?
I don't remember. I remember the spirit of the joke.
Thank you. It was like, oh, a completely quiet mother figure. That's how you know this is a work of fiction.
That's right.
My mom immediately stopped teasing me. But she was cracking up. And that's how I survived my childhood. If you can make mom laugh, you can get away with anything.
Yeah, but that's also like a testament to how much the two of you love each other, because like, I cannot tell you how much I hate you, but I'm going to do this thing for you. Like, you can tell someone how much you can be so honest with a person that you're just like, you enrage me to no end.
Oh, that's a theme of this right. movie all over the place. It's like there's an unending love between a mother and daughter, oftentimes. Not that you have to be, and it's not even necessarily your bio parents, but when you have a lifelong love with somebody, a lot of times the little words don't matter. It's the bigger things.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's, I mean, and that's the end of the film. So thanks for joining us, Loners.
Yay.
summed it up for you right then. But okay, so she goes, the woman laying there is beautiful. She's like, she's got white hair and it's like the sun palace sort of, I don't remember if that's what they named it, but it's gorgeous and golden and it's the brightest room I think we go in for the entire film, really. Right.
And the guy who was outside is the prime minister. Mm-hmm. And when he brings her in, he pretty much explains the backstory, which is he like throws this box on
it's
the ground.
It's the little red box from his hat. Did you notice?
Oh, yeah. And he tells this backstory of how this was a princess who she was a princess of shadow. And she ran away from home and she came here to befriend the Queen of Light. And
who's our lady on the table.
Yeah. And then she ended up stealing, but it was all a ruse to try and get this charm.
Yes. It's a very Gaiman thing to have this box explode into this exposition music box with these little mice come out and they're doing like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da kind of like circusy, but like mice. It reminds me of the mice from Coraline, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it also reminds me of Kubo with the Two Strings in that it has this tiny vignette of explanation for like this whole plot point with the dark side princess coming to steal a charm from the light side queen and then like effing off and then the queen falls asleep and we need the charm to wake her up.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's do you know what the charm is? He's like,
no.
Do you know what size it is? Do you know where you might find it? And he's like, no. But I have a feeling I would know it if I saw it. And she's like, how do you know you haven't? He has a moment where he goes, how do I know if I've seen it? I didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the chicken. She goes, I don't think it was the chicken. I thought it was very sweet.
It was. This is pretty much our call to action for the hero, where she has to go ahead and get the charm.
She sits down next to the lady and she flashes to her mom and flashes back. And she's like, I wish you were here. I wish I could wake you up. And then she knows that the charm will wake her up. And she goes, I know, I'll do it. And she charges herself this quest, which I think is very progressive and very nice.
Yeah.
I think this movie passes the Bechdel-Meyer test.
Yes, because of the fact that the mom and the daughter are in a scene together with no men, not even the patient who's eaten the grapes at the beginning, and they're not talking about any men.
Yes, and then also later on, the dark mom and they're at a table.
Oh, yeah.
Yay,
two scenes.
I mean, we're cheering the bare minimum, but hey,
it's something.
I like that she gave herself a quest.
I do. Find the charm, save the queen. Save the queen, save the world.
Yes.
So part of the reason why this like black stuff is kind of like going everywhere is it's this whole big metaphor for, the loss of Helena's like innocence and loss of her creativity because of everything that she's going through. There are moments where she looks through windows and she sees her alternate version of herself doing different things.
Yeah, it's interesting that, and actually this is a theme from The Cell. Sorry. But there's this idea that we have, I think, that we have where there's this innocent small part of us that gets to be abstracted from the things that we do as we grow into being an adult. There's no perfect way to be a teenager. It's awkward and terrible. And you go from being like the crappiest oldest child to the crappiest youngest adult. And you have like the better part of what, 10 years of that where you're too young to do anything and you're too old to do other things. So like you can't have stupid little kid fun, but you can't have adult older fun. So you're just kind of like, so you fight it. I mean, like depending on how you're raised, like, and especially if you're experiencing major trauma and loss like this kid is, there's a lot of stuff to unpack, and you want to keep this good little part of you safe, and it's different, and it's figuring things out, and it's doing things the best it possibly can. And then you look through the window and there's that shit person who said that thing that you would never say. But remember in drama when they said there's nothing you will ever do that's outside of your character? Because if it was outside of your character would be different than you're perceiving them.
Yep.
Oh, I hate that. It's true, though. She has the capacity to be a crappy human being, and she's learning that, at the same time perceiving herself to be the heroine. And that's too deep for me. But hey, Valentine, who, trusty old Valentine, you know what he says? What's the reward we're going to get?
Yeah.
She's like, well, we're going to save we're going to wake up the queen and save the world. And he's like, no, this is why you're supposed to have your manager with you to negotiate like vast riches and get like the money. I like that. So where are they going to go? They need information, Lydia.
Well, the best place that you can find information is the library.
Oh, that's great. It's got tons of books.
Actually, yes. Yes, it is the library. I was thinking 10 steps ahead.
That's all right. You tend to. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm 2 steps behind. I'm like, remember when we talked about this 2 scenes ago?
Where are the flying fish? Is that later?
That's later after they go to the library.
Yeah. But there are flying fish all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because up is down and left is right and things are floating through the air all the time in this fantastic, literal imagining of her art being a place that they're walking through.
Right. Because that's what all of this is in reference to. It's the art that she keeps in her room, in the trailer. It's these different cities that she pretty much creates with these different characters.
Mm-hmm.
You see in Helena's artwork that you do have these griffins or these sphinxes where they have human faces on them.
Lots of buildings and fishes, and it's fascinating. Like these structures that she has. A lot of them are line drawings. Some of them are more pastel. Not pastels and colorful, but like maybe like charcoal, maybe pastels and the creaminess of how it looks. Some of them have really jagged edges. Some of them feel more like watercolors. Color, I think they used very deliberately in this film and sparsely. They really want, and they did throughout the entirety of the film, focus on light and dark. And it was one or the other. And it's not until we get later in the film that we see more grays and colors, which I think might be indicative of her hero's journey or her growth or her arc or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the light in it continues to strobe as long as she's in that world. The light strobes. It goes slightly dark and then it returns back to its lightness. They kind of give that for an effect of like a dreamland, but...
Yeah, and there's lens flares that direct your eye a lot of times, and I think that's a fascinating choice because you can't, like, I mean, lens flares aren't naturally occurring. You're not, like, that doesn't happen outside of, like, your glasses or the film itself, you know? We got some really great lens flares several bazillion times, like, especially, I'm thinking Princess Bride, like, used to great effect, but I think it was much more deliberate in this film.
Right.
The reason I mentioned the fish, even though we haven't really seen all of them yet, is that they only created 42 fish, and then they just repeated those fish over and over again.
Dude, I didn't notice.
Right.
That's fine. They...
But it was 42 fish.
Oh, you know why they did that. Gaiman wrote the intro to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because he like super loved Douglas Adams. There's one more reference.
Nice.
I can't wait to share it with you. I mean, one more note, one more that I noticed.
Right. Okay. So at the library, they're asking for help and they kept getting shushed. But then she was like, I need to find a very useful book. And he was like,
really useful book.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, fourth floor, you're going to need a net. And so they get a couple of nets.
Yeah.
And then they go up to this specific area where there is, and oh, the librarian that they talk to has like all of these different like styles of face. Like the eyes are different from the, like one eye is different from the other. The mouth is like obviously a human. I think this is Stephen Fry.
It is in fact Stephen Fry.
That's probably Stephen Fry's mouth.
I don't doubt it. I think the mouths are nearly always played by the person whose mouth it is.
Yeah. So
that makes sense. That tracks. Okay.
Right. So when they get to this bookcase.
She reaches to grab one.
Yeah. And then all the books freak out.
You can edit the real noise in.
And so they have to like, they use the nets to try and grab one. And they grab one and then she pulls it out and the librarian comes back and he takes it.
Well, it flies out of her hand and he snatches it out of the air, which it was just this beautiful little, and now I will give you a narration. And then
more backstory.
Yeah, these books all, so he, I don't know if he gestures for them, but all the books fly back into the bookshelf and then they turn in such a way that they become a white canvas and has, as he reads the complete history of everything to her, it beautifully falls into this illustrative narrative.
Yeah. When I have one more, I have another fact for you. When she reaches for the copy of The Complete History of Everything in the library, the book directly beside it, and you only, this is like a half a frame. This is like, I mean, it's only in there for just a moment. The book directly beside it is Muppets in Space using the font from Farscape. So it's actually a reference to the Farscape Muppets in Space, not Muppets from Space, the 1999 film.
Oh, what's Muppets? What's that then?
Farscape is a science fiction show with Jim Henson puppets in it.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
You should.
Yeah.
Okay.
I tried getting into it. I couldn't really get into it, but Muppets, as always, are just amazing. And I felt like I could, if I really like sat down, then I could probably go ahead and like if I was really paying attention. Like maybe if I tried it now, maybe.
The writing wasn't the best, which tends to be a very frequent thing that we say now is that visually it's very striking and dynamic and the writing is just not there.
Yeah.
As this story of everything is being told, we see this book kind of land on her head.
Yeah. If it was smaller, it'd look like a bow, but it's about the size of like like two business cards. It's not very big. It's probably 4 inches by 3.5, maybe.
And the story that's being told is essentially Helena's story. And it talks about the charm and how what she saw was reflected in the charm. And it's beautifully animated. It gives us a whole idea of what the charm is all about and how it was like a gateway.
It was and the creation of the universe they're currently in, how she drew all over one side of the paper and then turned it over and continued to draw. So that's how they created the light and the dark side. I think it's beautiful.
Right. And so when it's all done, Helena takes the book off of her head.
He goes, you should, she's like, oh, a really useful book. He's like, you should take it with you. If you don't, it'll just depress the others and they'll start molting and then just pages everywhere.
Delivered brilliantly by Stephen Fry.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. She opens it up and you notice that Valentine just always dismisses this book.
Yeah.
It's like, stupid book. What could it possibly say that's useful?
Yeah.
And then she opens it up and says, remember what your mother said.
Right.
And she turns it again and it says, remember what your mother said? Why don't you look out the window?
Yeah. And so when she looks out the window, she's like, well,
the sign of the queen. What is the sign of the queen?
It's the sun. It was all over her room when we went in there. And so she looks at this area that is bright and shiny and it's down this road. And so when they transition from the library and they're in the road, that's when we see the fish just floating above as they're headed towards the very end of this road.
And this is where they're like, we'll get rich and then we'll do what rich people do. We'll bathe in fish and we'll
eat chocolate buttons
until we burst.
and we'll play the concertina. I do love how he says concertina.
What?
And he talks about like getting fancy hats too. Yeah. I think this is when he talks about the fancy hats because that comes up later.
So they get to the entrance of this place that says Giants Orbiting, right?
Right.
And Valentine sits down. He's like, I'm not going any further. She's like, what? He's like, no, I'm staying here. I don't need to go in there. I will see you when you come back out. Because he kind of knows that it kind of blows for him to be in there. And she starts walking in. And then that's when we see the griffin.
Okay. This is the third and last pun that I have. Riddle me this, Catman. Told you all of these are great.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for that. This is Robert Llewellyn as mm-hmm. the griffin. He is the second red dwarf actor we have had in a film. I'll let you remember.
Oh, yeah. Well, Danny John Jules wasn't in Cats.
No, he wasn't. That's not the reference.
Oh, it was from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, he was. He was a doo-wop guy on the corner. Danny John Jules is a dancer, largely. And a singer, too.
He was in a production of Cats. He wasn't in Cats the movie.
Yeah. Like, I didn't remember that. But that I was remembering Little Shop of Horrors. Robert Llewellyn played Crichton in Red Dwarf, the android. And he's playing the Sphinx now. And we haven't really described the Sphinx. No, he's playing the Griffin. The Sphinx and the Griffin look very similar, except he's much larger.
Mm-hmm.
And they're small cat-like things with rainbow wings. And this is a large cat-like thing with, like, haunches and stuff. And he wants riddles and things.
And so she goes ahead and he's like, answer my riddle and then I'll let you pass. And she's like, okay, what's your riddle? What stands on four legs in the morning, two in the afternoon, and three in the evening? And she says...
I can't remember their name.
It was the name of a dog.
Yes.
Yeah. And he was like, no, it's not. And she's just like...
It is.
Yeah. I saw him on four legs in the morning, two in the afternoon show, and then three in the evening because he hurt his paw.
He also can ride a skateboard.
Yeah. And so she was like, okay, my turn. What's green, hangs from the wall, and whistles?
And he's like, oh, I don't know.
Take a good long think.
And she just slides away.
Yeah.
And we cut back to Valentine, who's sitting in front playing with his balls. I don't know what he's playing with. Yeah. He's playing by himself.
His juggling balls. Oh.
he sees the darkness approaching him and he starts to freak out. So he decides to run into Giants Orbiting. Right. And
right. He comes across the griffin.
Right. And the griffin's just like, he's like, hey, you. He's like, yeah. Riddles. OK, what if you've got it? You can't say it. And if you say it, you haven't got it. And the griffin's like, I don't know. He's like, just hurry up. Quick. Answer my question. He's like, I don't know. It's a secret. Well, then, OK, just tell me. It's a secret.
The joke here is that Valentine is giving him the answer, but the guy thinks it's a secret.
And he's like, what? And he goes, Valentine goes, look, an idiot. And the guy turns and looks.
He's like, what?
And then he turns back and he's gone. It's one of the best.
So the area where the floating giant, where the orbiting giants are, is just this series of stairs, spiral staircase, which I want a greenhouse with four of those on each corner. That's going to just like, I mean, these are large spiral staircases, but I love the spiral staircase.
I do love a spiral staircase.
Yeah, it's hard to say five times
Spiral staircase. Yeah, no, I love a spiral staircase.
And so she gets to the top of one of those as Valentine's catching up to her and is like, we got to go.
Well, he catches her at the bottom and then she kind of like drags him up and is like, I have to talk to them. And he's like, oh, it's going to take forever. And then it's going to be like, I'm paraphrasing, but he's just like, it takes forever. They're not succinct like I am. Like, you start a conversation and then he like looks up and he goes, she's gone.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I'm talking to myself again.
Yeah.
And that's when he runs up the stairs to be with her.
Right. And so she gets to the very top. She's talking with the giant saying, we were sent by the queen. We're here to help. We need to know where the charm is. And
Valentine is super put out because they're like, the charm that you see. He's like,
Yeah, talking to the giants is like talking to the Ents. It takes like forever for them just to complete a sentence.
Well, they exist in a different time. Like, don't they say that like if we were the fruit flies that drive us crazy, we would be like these slow moving, lumbering things into them. Mm-hmm. Like they're like this fat. It's like that. What's that video game with the guy with the dead guy with the red face who's like avenging his family and he has to fight all these gods?
Oh, God of War.
Yeah.
I think of Max Payne, too. Max Payne was the first one to really do bullet time in a video game after The Matrix came out.
Huh. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Super down. Oh, so that's why I think they talk so slow, is because they not only are they made out of rocks, but like they're huge.
Right. And so they eventually get out of the giants that the charm is the mirror mask. And then you see like one is constantly floating up and the other is constantly sinking.
Yes. And so they hold each other in flux, which I think is a pretty beautiful visual. And we were talking about this. It reminds us of the parents, right? There's right. the one who aspires to be this circus performer, this great performer, and this other one that like makes sure that the wheels get oiled and like everything comes together and is like making the dream happen. Mm-hmm. But making the dream happen is hard work, and it's a lot of plate spinning, so to speak. But like what it does is, if you're lucky, it provides a balance, and that's why I think it reminded us of the parents.
The mother manages the ticket booth of their family. She's the realist. And like, he's the idealist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, why not? It takes both.
Mm-hmm. But as this conversation's coming, the tension in the scene builds and builds and builds.
Because, Valentine's just yelling.
Because they're in a rush because of the fact that whatever this like darkness is, it is creeping and it like starts grabbing at one of the giants, the one that's floating down, it like grabs his arm.
Yeah. And we see that. So the bottom one's limbs are upstretched and the sinking one is all down. And I think it actually grabs the sinking one's left arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the floating one, its hand is up, and you eventually see that there's a little box.
Right.
We hear the word mirror mask. The black sludge starts to drag the sinking guy towards the ground. And I say guy, non-gender, they are rocks. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, it's probably the hardest thing to watch for me in this entire film. And they manage to get the box to Helena. And then you see the balance shift, and now the sinking giant is being pulled towards the earth, and they're trying to hold on to each other. It's not like they happenstance to be together. This is the part where you realize that they want to be together. And this kind of Adam meets God sort of hand gesture, you see these hands like slipping from each other, and sinking gets pulled down and melts into the earth because of the slime, and then you just see fingertips, and then the floating one just floats away, and it's so...
Yeah, and
it hurts.
The last visual on the one floating left by themselves, it almost looks like they're about to go in the fetal position, which hurts even more.
Yeah.
Darkness. No parents. Because they died.
Other things that are dark.
Talking about Batman.
We cannot confirm nor deny that Neil Gaiman wrote for Batman.
So back down at the stairs, they're making a quick getaway, but what? It's the griffin who's like, tell me what the answer of the riddle is. It's like, oh, what is, it's a herring. I was like, a herring isn't green. It is if you paint it green. A herring isn't nailed to a wall.
We could nail it there.
Yeah. Well, herring doesn't whistle.
I just put that in there to throw you off.
Technically, you could justify a herring. Ring, whistle, they're similar.
Yeah, that does hold a certain note, Lydia.
Yeah.
You could say that the riddle was just a red herring.
No, it was a green herring, Chad.
It was a green herring!
I will say, before the end of the... I know, we love it when I go back in conversation, but do you remember when Valentine was screaming, polite conversation or death! Polite conversation or death!
Yeah. This was at the Orbiting Giants.
Yeah, I love that. I'm sorry, we missed writing that. I mean, okay. So they escape.
Yeah, they escape. You know, no real harm to them, but harm to one of the beautiful giants.
It's true.
Mm. So they're...
Well, both of them, really.
One of the last things that the giant said was get to higher ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're walking down the street. And I can't remember. I think this is one of the first moments where we see Helena, second or third moment, where we see her go to a window to see what's going on. And some of the things that she sees when she looks in this window is, you know, she sees herself sleeping. And so she's like, oh, this is a dream. And then she sees herself smoking and she has a boy over and she's eating chips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see the evolution of what she thinks like her body is doing in the real world.
Yeah.
But she does have a conversation with Valentine and she's like, mirror mask, what do you know about that? He's like, I know nothing about that. And then conveniently a mask shop appears.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
They come to a mask shop and they're like, what better place to learn about masks than here? And so when they go in, there's all of these sphinxes around it.
Yes, there's a smattering of masks along the wall. The sphinxes are all over the place. There's a mirror mask record on the gramophone.
Yeah, there's a lady who runs the shop and
her name is Cynthia.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, we have some questions about a mirror mask.
Well, come in and have some tea. You young people with your tea and your cakes and you have adventures?
Yes.
I love her.
Yeah.
She's the worst.
And she does this whole thing where you know when you go over to a friend's place and they got like an animal there and the animal's just like kind of being obnoxious because it's an animal. And
I don't know what you're talking about.
And so you're
that
like
has never happened before.
And so you're like trying to find a place to sit down, but there's just this one cat who's just sitting
just move the
in
cat.
The chair.
Just
and
move the cat.
Just kick him off. I think she says to throw him off.
Shove him off, push him off, something like that. Yeah,
something like that. And you're like, oh no, 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 I don't want to do that. That is the exchange between Cynthia and Valentine with her cats, her many, many sphinxes.
I wrote down that I can smell this scene. Can you smell it? Because I look at it and I'm like, I know exactly what that smells like.
Yeah, I think I've cleaned that house before.
Bad. Like, I feel bad. It's just, man, cats got uric acid. You got to take care of that.
Right.
I smell bad.
And so
if you can smell it a little bit, anyone who walks in can smell it a lot of bit.
Yeah. So they're about to sit down. Cynthia serves them tea and cakes. But oh, hygiene.
Yeah, she's like, what do we do? And Helena's like, what? We wash our hands before we eat.
Hygiene.
So, yeah, she scoots her off to the bathroom. She walks into the bathroom. This is the part you were talking about. There's a cat on like the back of the toilet. There's a cat sitting in the toilet. And I say cat, but they're Sphinx.
Yeah.
With their little rainbow wings, just like, and their little flat faces that are all the same. It's okay, so you got this rendered cat, but then you have this stretched human face across it. And yeah. I cannot tell you, if you haven't seen it, how wrong it looks. And yet it works. It is a chili chutney sandwich. A chili chutney egg sandwich.
Yes.
All of the components are wrong, and yet it's delicious.
These were the creatures that you were talking about back in our cats episode, right, Jen? Yeah. This is more convincing.
It truly is. So she washes her hand and then she realizes that there's a window in the bathroom. So she goes and she looks through it. And that's when she sees her
alternate
self, her dark self, the dark princess, really. We're supposed to think of her as this disconnected creature who happens to have the same face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I think, the scene where she's just like smoking and then the boy walks over and she starts to make out and she's like, stop, stop it, stop it.
That's gross. That's disgusting.
And then, okay, so she starts to back out of the bathroom because I think the girl looks, I think she's sitting on the bed in that scene. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep all of the dark princess moments straight. She's sitting on the bed and looks up and sees her. She almost sees her and she backs up and she's like, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
And she backs up and hits the toilet a bit. And the toilet cat, Sphinx, looks up at her and she like looks down and she's like, ugh, because he's like the toilet one.
Mm-hmm.
And he like turns his head and he goes, he gives her a big like, like this. It's the funniest grin. It's the funniest thing. Is the second funniest thing that any of the Sphinxes does.
Yeah.
And so she walks back out into the dining tea party area.
Right. And I think Cynthia is talking about, like, Valentine's trying to get some information out of her about the mirror mask. And so...
Do you remember what my favorite Sphinx is doing now?
Is it the one with the record player?
Yeah. He puts his hand on the mirror mask record and it starts... It had been like a weird macabre music. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, and Cynthia goes, Fluffy, stop it. And Fluffy backs up and he looks up and he's like, he uses this little face that pitch would give me anytime.
Fluffy's just trying to realize his DJ dreams.
You know what?
I'm all
scritchy scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the last joke I ever told my dad? What did the DJ name his son?
No, I don't remember what it was.
Eric. I couldn't make my dad understand that joke. It's like, I can't explain it better than that, Dad. It's just what the record scratch.
Anybody born after like 1980 is going to recognize
or that. Like born before 1960.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wrote my notes are like, Fluffy is pitch.
Yes. And so the whole thing that the important thing that you need to know here is that Cynthia doesn't really have any information about it. Her late husband was, you know.
What was his name? Bernard?
Bernard, yeah.
She goes, I was talking to my husband, Bernard, and he says to me, the mask helps you actualize your dreams. It helps you focus and it gives you powers. And I said, Bernard, what are you saying? And he goes, Cynthia, my dear, you have to understand, I don't know what I'm talking about. And Valentine's like, that's it. We gotta go. And Helena's like, hey, wait, we need to get information. He's like, she's bloody freaking crazy.
And so Helena pulls out her book and she's like, well, this is gonna help. And so she...
That stupid book. It doesn't tell you anything.
She pulls it out and she says, don't let them see you're afraid.
And all the cats start going,
Yeah, you see the cats kind of eyeing her and everything.
Yeah,
and Valentine's just like, what does that mean?
Cynthia said there are about 30 or more of these things. And we were scared of one when we first met them, right?
Yeah.
Valentine asks her for more cakes. And she, Cynthia goes to get some, and that's when they read the book. And then Cynthia comes back. They're like, we gotta go. And Cynthia's like, well, take these cakes with you. She goes, you'll never know when you might need them. Leans in to Helena and goes, and don't let them see that you're afraid. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's how you know, like, all of these things are just like, you got to get out of here now.
Yep. Exit. Stage right, even. Yuck, 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 yuck.
So that's exactly what they do. And they're figuring out their next step. That Helena points to a really high tower. And she's like, okay, so we need to go that way. But when she looks down at the ground, she sees that they are all surrounded by Sphinx.
Yes, there's wanted posters all over with her dark side princess self on mm-hmm. it. They need to go. They talk about the tower. About why yeah. Valentine doesn't have his tower anymore.
Right.
Because they got into an argument. We don't know. We never know about what.
Yeah.
But they're not talking. And Helena's like, you should apologize. And they're like, Helena, pots and kettles, yeah. Helena. Hey, pots and kettles. Maybe just own up to the mouthy thing that you said to someone or something that you loved. And maybe you just, maybe you're over it by now.
Right.
No. Oh, so we still have a third of the movie to go.
Well, she also, you know, said that she never really said that she was sorry to her mom. So it's not really like her calling the kettle black. It's more like she recognized that she needed to apologize
uh-huh.
and she needed to do that sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So it's more like she's kind of like, you know, this is part of the reason why I think it's like a dream and it's not meant to be taken literally.
I like that Valentine's never say they're sorry.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
But they get surrounded by the Sphinxes.
Oh, by the way, Valentine's Moving Castle. Right?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, the Sphinx show up,
mm-hmm.
and I call this Uncatty Valley.
Yes! I love, this movie is ripe with puns.
It really is weird.
So Helena and Valentine are surrounded by these cats. And I mean, what else do you do outside of pull out your walkthrough and see what the next step is?
Right. And she opens it up and the page, I didn't write this down, but it says pages are sticky like toffee and very hard to chew. And the Valentine's like, what is this bullshit? Like, this doesn't make any sense. He's like, what a dumb little book. And she goes, what a brave little book. And I'm like,
yeah.
The most redeemable character in the entire film.
Mm-hmm. We know at this point that the Sphinx, they like to eat pages. And mm-hmm. this book is pretty much saying, toss these pages at them. They'll eat me and then I'll distract them with chewiness.
Yeah. So she throws all these pages and it's a very satisfying flutter of CGI'd pages. But they all fall to the Sphinx and they start to chew them. And it's very cute. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why. But like, hey, if you have to be cannibalized by anthropomorphized cats with little rainbow wings. So they're eating the book. It's very cute. They run away.
Yeah. And they get to this tall tower where they walk up all of these stairs. They don't get to the very top, but they get towards the top. And this is a moment where Valentine's like, watch your step. It looks really rickety.
She says, it's perfectly safe.
And then she falls through a hole.
The floor busts out from under her.
And
she's on the floor and he's like, oh, what were you saying?
She was like, fine, don't ask me if I'm okay.
Because she looks up and she's surrounded by what my notes describe as gorilla bird flying squirrels.
Yeah, makes sense. She's like, hi. And knowing what happened with the Sphinxes and where they were surrounded, seeing her surrounded by all of these things, it's like, are there
15 of them? Or are there like 20 of them?
All I know is that they're encircling her and she's getting like, are you guys going to attack me or something?
Right. She's like, hello, who are you? And they're like, Bob? They all have red beaks except for this one that has blue.
Yeah.
And he turns and he goes, what does he say, Lydia?
Malcolm.
And then another one smacks him in the face. And his beak flies off.
Yeah.
He picks it up.
So basically.
I'm sorry. I love her so much.
She's adorable. So basically all of these creatures say one word, Bob, except for one that says Malcolm. And he's my favorite.
He says, okay, first of all, yes, Miss mm-hmm. Malcolm.
Yeah.
He is. And should be, and always will be, the second most redeemable character after the really useful book, right?
Right.
But he says several words. He's like, he says like mask?
Mm-hmm.
He says,
nicely. She tells them, we're looking for the mirror mask. Can you point us in the right direction?
Yeah. They do a kind of slapstick routine where if he says something that isn't Bob, they go to smack him.
Mm-hmm.
And then like he ducks one and then he smacks another guy and then like three people's beaks fall off. And it's pretty good. And she's like, well, can you help me find it? And then they look out the window behind her because they're in this very derelict building. And then all of a sudden these things, they look like bats or birds. They're these figures that like are flying en masse. There's thousands of them, it appears. And one flies through the window and smacks straight onto the face of one of the Bobs.
Yeah, and it takes it over.
Yeah, and it looks, it's a parasite at least, a mind controller at least. And did you notice when it smacks on, it kind of looks like a splashing paint drop, but it also kind of resembles the Dark Queen's whole hair motif situation. Because they're all like her personal loogies.
Yeah, because I think we do see her, like, she's trying to get to Helena. Mm-hmm. And so, like, at one point, she, like, vomits out all of these and they go flying.
Yeah, it's really gross, though. She keeps hawking up all these loogies. She should really get that black lung looked at.
But you remember what happens when one of them tries to get at Malcolm.
He holds it off.
Yeah, he puts his hand. He's got good reflexes.
And it's, like, reaching towards him with these little nyan tentacles. And he's like, no! And he smashes it to the ground. Mm-hmm. Very satisfying.
I should also mention all of these characters are very muscular.
They look like gorilla, bird, flying squirrel things. And they're gray.
Do they look like gorillas?
Gorillas. They look like the creature outside of the trailer.
Yeah.
That was pushing the trolley, the cart, the buggy, the tram. They call them trams. Applauders, 3 weeks into this episode. British people call buggies trams. Americans call buggies strollers.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they call it a tram. Pram. A pram. Hey, Applauders, 4 weeks in.
I like to push the pram a lot.
That's a broom. Dang it.
I don't know. Anyway,
so sorry.
This is where a chase scene kind of goes through, where they're after Helena and she like is running, trying to avoid them. And then she like falls off.
It's an action sequence for sure. Yeah.
And so Malcolm grabs her and then he goes swinging through. It looks derelict, but it also looks like a piece of construction.
Yeah, it looks like monkey bars.
Right.
It's very much perfect for what they're doing. They also grab Valentine, start swinging him through. Right. Now they're fighting between the black... blackfaced is not what I mean to say. The parasitically used bobs?
The parasitic flies? Parasitic crows?
Bobocytes.
Okay. Because there's probably a lot of bobs that ended up dead.
Parabobs?
Parabobs. I don't know.
Bobocytes. I like it better. So they managed to escape.
Right. They also managed to get to the very top of this thing, which was their ultimate goal. And
they jump off. And since they're flying squirrel guys, they're able to fly away.
And she
sees the glint and she's like, take me over that way. Convenience.
Right. But I think it's also like midway between the land of the light and the land of the shadow.
Yeah, that's where she's going to use this key did we describe the key that came in the box? We've got to the fact that they got the box. They opened it. There's a key inside. It has the symbol of the sun, which was the shape of the building that they just climbed. And now they're headed towards the glint on the horizon, which is the joining of the dark and the light lands. Are you with us?
Yeah.
So the way that they know that it's the right mountain is she holds the key up and it's in the same shape as something.
Of a pool of water.
Right.
Which is very much probably where they stole that from Star Wars Episode 9 with the Wayfinder.
Oh.
Do you get that? Because Jen made the reference earlier and I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing.
So Rise of Skywalker, there's a dagger and positions in a way, and then it takes you into this place that's supposed to have a beacon.
That's not how Indiana Jones went?
I can't remember.
They hold up a staff in that too. Oh, it's called a pram. Why does he like to push a pram a lot? If you like, that's another reference, guys.
Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail.
Sorry. Oh, no. Okay.
So they go over to this lake.
Well, before that, we should say that the Bobs, like two Bobs and one Malcolm, who is in the middle.
Malcolm in the middle.
Subtle. My humor is so subtle. She's like, thanks so much. And they're walking off. And that's it. That's all we see of them. And Malcolm goes, nicely. Mm-hmm. Or something like that, right? And then they start walking towards it, but they pass the window. And now my notes have proven us correct in that reverse makeout yelling is the note I have. So this is where we see her opposite Dark Princess self making out with a guy in a room. And she's like, ew, you're frozen. Valentine's like, it's just a window. There's nothing on the other side. I have no idea what your problem is.
Right.
It's pretty interesting. Oh, okay. So we're at the dreamy border weirdness part. So it's the edges of things and life is like blurring together and her mom is there all of a sudden and then it's the queen actually and then it's her mom again and she's like, did I dream you a boyfriend?
She was like, no, he's gross, but he has an Irish accent, so I might like him.
I mean,
That's kind of the feel of it. So.
Yep.
Hey, this is your audio engineer and not a waiter, Jen. And what's this? It appears that some malevolent lady of the dark web has taken over my body and scheduled parts 2 and 3 of our review of 2005's Mirror Mask back to back. Oh no! Actually, it's my birthday this week, and you, dear applauder, get the gift. No reason to wait until next Tuesday. Part 3 is ready in your feed now. So there's no reason to wait to listen to our completion of the plot walkthrough, along with our shocked and applaudable moments. We'll be taking a longer break than normal because of this back-to-back release, and we'll return October 12th for a brand new episode. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.